Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Got four items, depending on how you look at it, to talk about today. They're all very, very important. Jim Caldwell, he explained everything to me off mic. It's very interesting to me, to say the least. We're going to talk a little bit about the Pfizer board. We're going to talk a little bit about Stacey Abrams. We're going to talk a little bit about Scott Gottlieb. And we're going to talk a little bit about abolishing the income tax. Apparently, a bill was introduced and it passed. When I say it passed, I mean it wasn't immediately thrown out to abolish the IRS and replace personal income tax with a consumption tax. Jimmy, what's going on there?
So yesterday in the first full session for the Republican-led House, they passed the rules that they had agreed to that Kevin McCarthy was pressured to agree to from the House Freedom Caucus. With that rule change and some of the agreements, they brought a vote to the House this morning to abolish the IRS and take away the personal income tax. And of course, that has gone forward and apparently it's passed the House. Now, remember, the bill goes from the House, it goes to the Senate, Senate looks at it, they do a version of it, and then they come back in committee and they try to work something out. The likelihood of Joe Biden passing this, the likelihood of the Senate accepting it, the likelihood of it getting, you know, being successful
is about zero.
Is low. However, politically, it's a brilliant move because it forces all the legislators in the House and the Senate to take a vote on whether or not they're going to abolish the income tax and the IRS.
Yeah.
And my feeling is this will be a very damning vote when they vote not to abolish the IRS and not to take away the income tax when it comes time for the 2024 elections.
Yeah.
So it puts the Democrats and RINOs in a precarious position. I think it's quite interesting how this is, how aggressive the House under this leadership and under the pressure from the House Freedom Caucus is pushing forward on political issues.
They're going to make some changes. I really believe that because I think the only way the Republicans know that they can gain more power in the Senate and the House and the executive office, the only way is if they make some dramatic changes that make sense. And that's what's going on with that first one. You know, one thing I learned.
Let me add one more thing that Kevin McCarthy did. With this, so he kicked Adam Schiff and Swalwell off the House Intelligence Committee, and that's phenomenal. Schiff was the former, under the Democrats, he was the head of the Intelligence Committee. He abused it, he lied, and he influenced outcomes with the intelligence community. The Washington IC Intelligence Committee establishment is going to have to reshape how they do business, trying not to, because they've been appeasing him in the past, and now they're going to be under intense scrutiny, especially with this new committee that Jim Jordan's going to run.
Yeah.
I think he's a very powerful player to run this committee on government intervention and involving involvement.
Yeah, and so what you're saying is it looks like some really good changes are going to happen in the
Well, it's a good start.
Yeah, it's a great start.
Who knows how anything's going to turn out? And actually, Al, I don't know if any of these things will be successful, but they're setting the stage for political gains in the future when they're addressing the fundamental issues that Americans have been frustrated with Washington out for a long time.
Well, one thing the government doesn't have anything to do about changing is one of the members of the Pfizer board said that the most effective defense against COVID is natural immunity, and he was, of course, thrown off the board.
No, actually, let's get that clarified a little bit.
All right.
So the former FDA director, Scott Gottlieb, under the Trump administration, left his position as the director of the FDA and went to Pfizer as a board member.
Okay, and he quit.
Now, I'm sorry?
Didn't he quit?
He was forced to resign. I mean, change of administrations, he resigned.
Right. Okay.
The Biden administration did not want to keep him on. So what has Alex Berenson, a journalist, a very well-respected journalist, has been very strongly attacking the corruption and the censorship over COVID information.
Yeah.
Did a search on the Twitter files and found that Scott Gottlieb, Dr. Gottlieb, actually wrote to the Twitter executives, in particular Todd Boyle, on August 27th in 2021, to take action against Dr. Brett Giroir, Admiral Giroir, of the Health and Human Services Office, the Assistant Secretary of Health, because Giroir had posted that there was information from studies that showed natural immunity for COVID was superior to vaccines by a lot. And Scott Gottlieb, who is now, when he wrote this email and is now today, a member of the Pfizer board, had Twitter censor that comment. Twitter's initial response was, when they looked at it, they said it doesn't break our rules.
Yeah.
He continued to pressure to silence it. And he's been asked about it since. And what he said was, oh, I didn't want to create anger and create people that would, you know, push back.
Yeah.
Complete lie, misinformation, that and he ignored factual evidence. And this is unbelievable to me that that Scott Gottlieb had took this. Well, it's not unbelievable because he's a member of the Pfizer board and he was pushing heavily for the vaccinations.
Yeah.
He's also on the review board for approval of, I think it's a, I believe it's a board that approves the effectiveness or the for the FDA and the Health and Human Services that approves vaccinations. So he had a double vested interest in this and actually cited against science and against a very respected Harvard graduate, University of Texas MD, who was the deputy, the assistant secretary of health, Admiral Brett Giroir.
Okay. So it looks like a lot of the things that you have predicted in the past are starting to come to fruition. At least it looks like it.
Well, we're starting to see more and more information of government censorship and corruption.
Right.
Now, we knew, and our listeners mostly have understood this from the beginning.
Right.
The difference now is these are becoming mainstream pieces of information. Another example is Washington Post just this weekend or this yesterday finally came out with an article that said in the 2016 election, Russian misinformation had almost no impact on Twitter and any of the voting. So that took 6 years to come out, even though we all knew it way back when that there was very little impact by the Russian influence. But there are many people that still believe that. But when the Washington Post comes out and other agencies are starting to face the reality, especially with Republican leadership in the House, of this involvement in government to censor information and to influence media and tech, it's coming to a head. And people are going to wake up and say, oh, man, I've been lied to. And especially when you see the numbers of excess deaths and the problems with the vaccination that are becoming more and more apparent and clear with science and information.
Jim, I want to get your opinion on something. This is a pretty big day, given the fact that it's probably about the first day that the Republicans have had anything to say with their new power in the House. Do you think they're going to be successful over the long term?
Well, I think, again, they're setting the stage for forcing the Democrats to take stands that may be against public agreement. And the Biden administration, the House and the Senate under Democratic control have basically ignored the public for the last 2 years under the Biden administration. And of course, the Washington establishment was attacking Trump and still attacks Trump for the last 6 years, 7 years, you know, since he announced his election in 2015.
Right.
So will we start to see a bit of a crack in that control of information? I think so. Will it be enough to change the outcome of what's happening in America? I don't know. But I would say that at least this is a good start.
Well, if the train really gets enough momentum behind it, the Republican train, then the one thing that will happen is, I think, Joe Biden will be a one-term president, which I think would really, really make these things become reality as opposed to hopes and prayers.
Yeah, no, I agree. They need the most important thing that could happen, and again, like I hate to say that I'm starting to be a pessimist, because I'm very much an optimist and believe in our Constitution that the outcomes, the American people in the long term will be successful. But I'm very concerned about the oppression and the control that's managed by very powerful people.
Yeah.
And the way they manipulate information. And of course, the double standards out there with the Department of Justice and using law enforcement to enforce political actions.
Yeah.
So very disappointed. I do want to hope that we're on at least a starting point to return things to normal. Remember, the 60s and 70s were a disaster Ronald Reagan came in 1981 and began the turnaround.
Right.
The turnaround that lasted for a long time, even through the Clinton era. But then, of course, you know, we went into some very bad times after 9/11. And, of course, these expensive, crazy operations that went on for a long time that should have never have gone on like that. And so we're now suffering the consequences of 8 years. We're still hurting from 4 years of Jimmy Carter.
We're
still hurting from 8 years of Barack Obama. And now it's almost unbelievable what Joe Biden has done. And of course, I've got to say, you know, and I was a Bush supporter in many ways.
Yeah.
But some of the long-term decisions and his failures to understand what was happening inside Washington and the level of creep and corruption that was happening with so many influences, he failed to see that, and he was not successful. And of course, the Republican Party was not as successful as they tried to appease the left as opposed to fighting them.
Yeah, that really didn't work out at all. There's no question about that. One thing that happened, though, in the last few days, a story came out about Stacey Abrams, and I want to thank you very much for bringing it up off mic this morning. Stacey Abrams raised in her unsuccessful campaign over $100 million. And of that money, she paid her advertising agency somewhere in the neighborhood of $54 million. And when she was done doing that, she had no money left to pay for her staff.
That's right. They are $1.4 million in debt. Her campaign is $1.4 billion in debt. So the last few weeks of the campaign, you know, actually when they should have been closing out and preparing for countering arguments with Brian Kemp from the end of November, she was unable to pay her staff over $100 million. $54 million to her own advertising agency.
Yeah.
If that's not corruption in the extreme, I don't know what is.
No, I don't either.
We will see if the attorney general in Georgia actually takes action on that. We know the Department of Justice won't do it. But once again, here is a very influential, very powerful Democratic figure that failed not once, not twice, but three times in campaigns, and then has this level of corruption, and somehow she's still respected and at walking free on the streets. I just, for me, it is very disheartening to watch.
Oh, it's very disheartening, particularly happening in Georgia. There's no doubt. Well, it would appear, looking at all of these topics, you know, the income tax, abolishing the IRS, Scott Gottlieb, Pfizer board, etc., and Stacey Abrams, it would seem to me that really in the very, very first few days of the Republicans having majority in the House, some really interesting changes are taking place.
Yes, and there was very low expectations because of the really serious failure by Republicans to make a much larger gain in the House. But here's another side of that. Had the Republicans won what I had expected, which is somewhere between 30 and 50 seats overall in the House instead of the 12 or whatever we 10 or 12 that we gained. Had they done that, Kevin McCarthy would not have needed, he would have been able to get reelected speaker without the Freedom Caucus.
Right.
Without the Freedom Caucus standing up for these specific issues to make changes and to demand these types of votes to go forward, we would have seen business as usual. So it actually turns out, in my view, a little bit of an advantage that it's so close, because the Freedom Caucus and the people that are pushing these very important America First type policies are much more influential and forcing votes that wouldn't have taken place before. We probably would have seen business as usual, especially with the Senate.
Yeah.
And so it actually, to me, this is probably a good thing. Now the next step is to actually get somebody in leadership in the Senate that will take charge, right, as opposed to Mitch McConnell, who's really failing America and failing his party.
Yes, really, at this point in time. Jim, I want you to do me a favor. We've got a few minutes left here, about 5 minutes to be exact. Tell me a little bit about why the left-wing press is really bashing the Freedom Caucus.
Oh, it's obvious. They are a tremendous threat to the media and the tech control that's out there right now.
Right.
They are demanding investigations over censorship. They're demanding investigations of relationships between the federal government and these tech and media companies.
Uh-huh.
That is a big threat to them. And of course, we know that most of these major corporations have much broader global interests. And the reason why they support the policies they do are to expand those global interests and those financial interests. And the way they do that is influencing congressional leaders and the White House. The Freedom Caucus is a direct threat to that. And it's also something else that I believe. The journalist community and the tech community, they grow up in these insular urban environments that are very social oriented.
Yeah.
And this fairness, these arguments that have been built up over, socialism for a long period of time. And they're very left leaning. And so they actually are not objective journalists anymore. And of course, they are beholden to their editors. Their editors tell them to go a certain way, and
right,
they go a certain way.
Right.
And they go there quite easily because that's where they are socially engaged, because they live in these major markets that are very democratically oriented, very leftist, progressive oriented.
Yeah.
L.A., New York, Washington, D.C.,
sure,
these major urban environments. That's where they come from.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Biden. And,
sure. Can you say? The guy's continuing to fail.
This is so ironic and it's hilarious. So interestingly enough, 6 days before the midterm elections, you never heard anything about it, but 6 days before the midterm elections, lawyers for Biden were going through boxes in his Penn Center office, University of Pennsylvania, Penn Center, a public building, without any Secret Service security, without any controls. They were going through his offices and found multiple classified to top secret SCI level documents.
Yeah.
Now, let's compare that to Mar-a-Lago.
Anybody could
Donald
have put
Trump.
Their hands on it.
Absolutely. They say they were locked, but basically they're saying it was a mistake, though the Department of Justice has put a prosecutor on it to take a look at it. But this, when you compare what the FBI did to raid Mar-a-Lago, when you compare the documents that Trump had said, hey, look, I declassified these documents and I have the authority to do it, you see that the Secret Service was actually at Mar-a-Lago, that they had been working together with the National Archives in order to clarify these documents. The National Archives goes to the FBI in order to force this. You see it was a political action.
Yeah.
Now, the National Archives were not involved at all with Joe Biden in these events. So the comparison splits quite widely here, and the likelihood of DOJ or anybody holding Joe Biden accountable for the exact same problem that they have been absolutely attacking Donald Trump for and spinning this great argument
in the other case.
But it's hilarious because they're not going to have any answers for this.
Yeah.
And they're going to lie their way out of it again. And once again, they're going to reduce the trust and faith in our government with the American people.
Yeah, no, it's a real shame. But I think the changes are on the way, and I'm really glad to see it. Jim, thanks so much, bud.
You bet, Al.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.